everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today will be Karen Harkless. She is a fellow PRN host. She has the show All About Food, and she also has a website called Responsible Eating and Living. And I am so excited to have her on, and I will tell you more about her in a little bit when she actually comes on. But first, I want to share with you things going on in and around the news and ways you can take action and, of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So first, I have to share with all of you, I'm sure many of you saw this week's presidential debate. And while I normally don't get into politics, I just have to say that it was so difficult to not turn the TV off. It was so difficult to watch a man who's supposed to be a role model, someone that we can look up to, act like a bully on the stage, disregarding the rules, disregarding and being disrespectful to the to Chris Wallace and to Vice President Biden, and it was just horrible. As one reporter said, it was a shit show, and it really was. It was just horrible. And no matter which side of the politics you are on, nobody could have watched that and think that our president was someone that you could look up to. And, you know, he went on to, you know, he would not even condemn white supremacy. He would not acknowledge global warming. I mean, here we are going through, you know, wildfires still burning in the Pacific Northwest. We have hurricanes coming at a greater rate and more fierce than ever. There's drought, there's flooding, there's, I mean, the, you know, global warming is being seen all across our country and the world. And to completely disregard science and say it doesn't even exist and not care about it and not do anything to make our greenhouse gas emissions less, but to actually go in the opposite direction and do away with all the safeguards of the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, you know, taking away regulations for coal mines and burning of fossil fuels. It's just horrendous, and it's so difficult to, you know, ask all of you out there to keep taking the same actions that we've been doing, to write to our senators and congressmen to, you know, reduce pesticides and stop burning fossil fuels. It just seems pointless when we have someone in the White House who doesn't care, just does not care. And so it's so disturbing. And a group of friends, you know, I'm a longtime meditator, and a group of friends have been gathering together and suggesting that we all try to, in addition to showing up on the streets and protesting and becoming activists outwardly, that we also try to become activists inwardly. And what I mean by that is, and I know it can seem a little out there to some of you that don't meditate or believe in higher energies, but I think if many of us, if lots of us, come together and try to focus on love and positivity and goodness, that we can maybe help to change the trajectory of where our country is going. Because right now it's not going very good. And I shared a world peace prayer on my in my newsletter and on my website that you may want to check out. I recommend it, and it's beautiful. It was written by a Buddhist monk. I don't know his name, but it's really beautiful. And so, you know, if a group of people come together, read the World Peace Prayer together, and then sit for 20 minutes and try to focus your energy on spreading love and compassion and not hate. As much as I dislike the person that is in the White House. I know that filling myself with hate towards him is not going to help me or help anybody. So it just doesn't help anything to expand hate. We need to expand love. So on that note, I encourage you all to really check that out. And then as far as activism and getting out there, the Women's March organization is organizing a nationwide protest on October 17th. And I actually ordered, and I'm really happy about this, I ordered a Handmaid's Tale costume that I can wear going forward to all of my protests. And I think it's a great idea because it's scary, but I feel like we're heading towards the Republic of Gilead. I mean, it's just, you know, the direction we're going is really not a good one. And so anyway, there are going to be protests and rallies across the country for the Women's March. Of course, a huge one is being planned in Washington, D.C. I don't know if they are going to be having one in New York City as well. But I do know that when we get out and become activists, at least we can feel like we're doing something. I know we had like a dozen women here 2 weeks ago wrote 400 letters to people to try to get out the vote. There's banks, calling banks that you can do through indivisible.org, where you can call and get people to or suggest to them that they get out and vote. And we're not pushing Republican or Democrat. The idea is that you just want people to get out and vote. So, you know, with the nominee for to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, I just know so many people are so depressed, myself included. It's really, really a trying time. I mean, the fact that Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell both said that Obama could not appoint a justice when he had almost a full year left of his presidency. And here there's only a few weeks to the election and they're trying to push this through. It's just such a double standard and so not the way of the people. It's not listening to the people. And, you know, we have to remember that he was not elected by popular vote. And we need to remember that. And more people are against the nomination than for it. And yet, because they own the Senate, they are going to ram it through. So I used to not be involved in politics at all, but it's really hard with how our country is looking and the direction it is going to, you know, put your head in the sand and just pretend nothing's happening. We all need to really do our part to try to move the needle in the other direction. So please show up for the Women's March. Get your friends to show up. Anything you can do to help get people out to vote, please do it. And now I would like to share with you my weekly recipe. As you all know, I have a huge garden. Oh, actually, I also meant to share this week photos of the mushrooms. A few weeks ago, I told you we were starting mushrooms, and our mushrooms are already sprouting. I will post some pictures. I haven't done that yet. I've been so distracted with so many other things going on. But we have yellow oyster mushrooms, bagfuls and bagfuls. I mean, we have like 8 big plastic bags filled with straw and spores that are just producing beautiful, beautiful yellow oyster mushrooms. Of course, the shiitake mushrooms that we inoculated, or the spores that we, or the logs that we inoculated with the spores of shiitake, they won't be ready for another year, but the oyster mushrooms really happened quickly. And so it's very exciting. I cooked up some mushrooms yesterday, and we'll be having lots of mushrooms. I can cook them up and freeze them, so that's another thing that's really wonderful. And, of course, I'm sharing them with all of my helpers that helped inoculate the spores as well. So the recipe I'm sharing right now is butternut squash muffins, because we have so many butternut squash coming out of the garden, and one thing that's wonderful about butternut squash is they will last, and they will last throughout the winter. But I still have so many, so I thought I'd try my hand at butternut squash muffins, similar to carrot muffins or carrot cake muffins. And this is great. I made them vegan and gluten-free. And very often, I mean, these days I'm just, I am doing everything vegan, but the gluten-free aspect, even though I am not gluten-free, many people that come around in my circle are. And so just making them gluten-free makes it easy and available to everybody. However, they do have nuts, so you would have to replace the almond flour that I'm putting in here with, you know, some more gluten-free oat flour or rice flour or more gluten-free flour as opposed to a nut flour if you have an allergy to nuts. Anyway, I start with 2 tablespoons of ground flax seeds that I mixed with 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar and 2 tablespoons of water. And then I also added 1 tablespoon of chia seeds to that. And I just let that mixture sit while I'm mixing everything else together. You have 1 large butternut squash that you're going to peel and put through the food processor to grate. Hopefully you have a food processor because grating it by hand would be a lot. But you want to end up with approximately 5 cups of grated butternut squash. 1.5 cups of maple syrup. 1 cup of organic oil. You can use a non-GMO canola oil or safflower oil or coconut oil. 2 cups of applesauce, 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract, 1 tablespoon of baking powder, 1.5 teaspoons of salt, 2 tablespoons baking soda, 4 teaspoons of cinnamon, 1 teaspoon nutmeg, 1 teaspoon allspice, and 1 teaspoon ginger. And then 2 cups of gluten-free flour, 2 cups of almond flour, and 2 cups of gluten-free oats that I also grind down and make flour. So I'm measuring the 2 cups of oats after they are ground down. And the same with the almond flour. I just take raw organic almonds and I grind those up and I measure 2 cups of almond flour with that. And the gluten-free flour, I've bought many different brands, and you can, you know, buy whatever brand of gluten-free flour you like. Or if gluten-free is not important to you, you can use a whole wheat pastry flour or an unbleached white flour. So you're going to start, like I said, by combining the flaxseed, the apple cider vinegar, and the water in a small bowl with the chia seeds and set that aside. In another bowl, combine all the dry ingredients. And in another bowl, combine all the wet ingredients. Add the flaxseed mixture to the wet ingredients, mix that up, and then you're going to add the dry ingredients into the wet ingredients until it's completely mixed up well. But you don't want to over-mix it. That's, you know, a trick with muffins. You want to just incorporate all the dry and the wet together, but you're not looking to beat it up at all. Also, I just wanted to share with you that I actually made this recipe once, and I left out the oil totally. I just used the applesauce in there and left out the oil, and they still were delicious. So if you're looking to reduce your oil intake or make these even a little healthier, you can actually just leave out the oil, and it still works and comes out beautifully. It's just not quite as moist as with the oil. But it's worth it. This recipe, believe it or not, makes 48 muffins, and they're just delicious. You're going to bake them in a 350 oven for 10 minutes, turn the pans around, and bake them for another 10 minutes or until a toothpick comes out clean. And that is it. Really delicious. So I encourage you all to give them a try and let me know how you like them. I love hearing comments from everybody. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Karen Harkless. She's a fellow PRN host. Like I said, she has the show All About Food. She is also the co-founder of a nonprofit organization called Responsible Eating and Living, also known as REAL. Karen combines science with practical knowledge from real-life experiences to educate about the healing benefits of a plant-based diet. She obtained the T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies and the E. Cornell's Plant-Based Nutrition Certificate. She's co-directed nutrition programs at the Food Revolution Network and was the editor of the Food Revolution Family Cookbook. She's appeared on Dr. Oz, Geraldo at Large, 2020, and CNN. And as I said, she hosts the weekly show, It's All About Food, on the Progressive Radio Network. She has a Bachelor and Master's of Science degree in Chemical Engineering from Bucknell University. She's worked in the semiconductor industry for 20 years, and she's also a classically trained singer and has performed opera and musicals in the United States and abroad, and won 2 international voice competitions, both in France and South Africa. And she's an ovarian cancer survivor, and we'll be talking about that today. She's a contributor to the book 25 Women Who Survive Cancer, Notable Women Share Inspiring Stories of Hope, along with Robin Roberts, Fran Drescher, and Patti LuPone. Karen and Gary produced the documentary The Lone Vegan, Preaching to the Fire, about Karen speaking to 250 cattle producers about animal agriculture's impact on climate change. And so she's a real activist and right there with me, and so it's really my pleasure to introduce all of you to Karen. Karen, are you with me?
I am. Hey, Bhavani.
Hi. Thanks for joining me.
I've been listening to you and taking notes because I wanted to respond on so many of the things you've said so far that I am in total alignment with. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Go for it.
Okay. So I know everyone is feeling, well, actually not everyone. So there's a group, maybe half, maybe a little more than half, that are outraged about what's going on in the world. And then there's a group of people pretty significant that are comfortable with what's going on today.
I know. I wrote that in my newsletter. It's astonishing to me that everyone doesn't see it the same way as we do. But that's the reality.
Exactly. So when you talk about meditating and going within, I want to expand on that because we are all responsible for our own lives. We can only control what's going on in our own lives, and we can perceive things one way or another. And we see that all around us because we're all experiencing life in the same time frame, but some perceive it differently and feel good, and others perceive it differently and feel bad. So even though we don't like what's going on in politics, we don't have to react to it. We can be doing things to make the world a better place, but not let it affect us as emotionally, and that's the real work.
Right.
And when we go within and meditate a little more, we have a better understanding of that. But the idea is not to let fear overtake us, because when it does, we become irrational and we don't do the things that really would make a positive difference, and they win.
Absolutely. But that's why I said I really feel we have to attack it from both sides, inwardly and outwardly. You know, I don't think we can just sit by the sidelines and not do anything either.
I'm not saying that at all. But another thing is there are things in our own life that we can control. And some of us do not realize that some of the things that we support in our everyday lives may have an element of violence to them. In the products that we buy without realizing who makes them, where they come from, who's benefiting from the profits, and with the food we eat, of course. I've been a vegan for 32 years, and it's all been out of the violence that's being caused to animals. So day in and day out, we are creating horrific violence to sentient beings, billions of them, and we're protesting against what's going on to people and to the planet while supporting this other horrific type of violence by what we put on our plate every day. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of things we can do within our own life, and it's an individual thing, but going within and reflecting and seeing what goes on in our daily life and what we're supporting is the first place to make change.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion.
I agree with you there. Absolutely. Absolutely. It took me a while, you know. I mean, I've been a vegetarian for over 40 years, but I've really only committed to the vegan lifestyle choice really this past year. even though that's mostly how I was eating. I mean, I, you know, significantly did not eat a lot of animal products, but I really made the change over since January, and it's been really wonderful. I'm really so happy that I actually
good. Well, I'm giving
over.
You a big virtual COVID-19 free hug.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. You know, it's an individual thing for all of us. We don't all see the same thing. We don't all understand the world in the same way. We're all on a different journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So was it your commitment to nonviolence with animals, or was it your diagnosis with ovarian cancer that inspired you to go plant-based? Because I know back in 2006, you were diagnosed with advanced ovarian cancer, and many people, that's the impetus to make a change. You know, many people know that a plant-based diet is a way of really healing cancer. And so that could be it, or was it more of the animal compassion that,
well,
that inspired?
If you do the math, Bhavani, I said I've been vegan for 32 years. So I went vegan in 1988, long before 2006. And I was vegetarian before 1988. I started as a teenager, and a friend of mine came in one day and said he was a vegetarian, and the light went off for me, and I realized I didn't want to kill animals anymore. It just was one of those knee-jerk things, and I stopped eating meat and chicken, and years later, I realized fish were a part of that picture, and I stopped eating fish and gave up dairy and eggs. Finally, all of it in 1988. And I was on a health path ever since. But there's so much I wasn't realizing, even about my own life. A lot of us will never know why we had cancer. I have my own theories. And I realized after the fact that as a teenager, I experienced really bad menstrual cycles. I had a very heavy flow. And there was nobody to talk to about it. Nobody talked about those things back then. So I just dealt with it. And I thought it was normal because that was the only body I had. And I ended up using very often 3 super tampons at a time. Now, guys may not understand what that means. But I learned later that tampons are loaded with dioxin. So I was getting a triple super dose when I was a teenager. And I believe that whatever problem I had as a teenager genetically, coupled with this giant load of toxin, ultimately contributed to my ovarian cancer when I was 48 years old. And I also believe I talk to my body. And this is what my body tells me. Now, you may think I'm nutty, but I encourage everybody to meditate, get in a quiet place, and talk to your body and ask the difficult questions. You'd be surprised what answers may come up. But I realized that I had been eating really well for a long time, and I believe my diet was protecting me. And then ultimately, when we get close to 50, you may have read this, we change a lot. And this is when people can experience a lot of illnesses, and either they make it or they don't. And then if they do, they continue living a long life. So this was my transition time. A lot of different things were going on. And all of a sudden, this giant tumor was growing in my body. But if you look at the statistics, and I love statistics and I hate them because just like life, they can be interpreted in different ways. I should be dead now, according to statistics. I had a 10 to 20% survival rate, but the statistics weren't looking at everything. They weren't looking at my attitude. They weren't looking at my diet. And they weren't looking at my privilege, because I'm not a wealthy person, but I had access to excellent doctors and friends and family who were supporting me. And that makes a big difference in healing from a health crisis. So all these things add together. But as soon as I was diagnosed, I really doubled, tripled up on the nutrition density of my diet. So I was juicing every day, and I juiced daily for 10 years. And I still juice now, just not as religiously. But I really upped the cruciferous vegetables. I ate less and less, or not even, the refined foods, the breads and the sugars, the things that could feed cancer. And I really wanted to make every calorie count. So even if we're eating the best diet on the planet, we're exposed to toxins all around us. We live in a filthy world. And right. Then there are also toxic emotions all around us. And with this political climate going on, if you let it, if you take it in, it can help, it can hurt you physically.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was, you know, really wanted to this week really talk about addressing that by going inward, because, you know, as much as we can dislike the person in the White House, perpetuating hate and anger and, you know, imagining all these horrible things happening to the people that you're not liking is not going to help, and it's going to ultimately hurt you. And
yeah,
so,
but it is fun in the moment, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But it doesn't do anything, and it's certainly not. It's not changing the vibrational energy that we need to change to try to bring it around to the other side. And so, you know, as one who's been an activist for, you know, all of my life, I mean, you know, even as a kid, you know, I was, you know, picking up garbage on city streets and, you know, protesting, you know, Vietnam marches. I mean, I've just been always out there. You know, I've also always been aware of the need to do inner work as well. And so I just thought I'd, you know, talk about that more this week in my newsletter, because I haven't really been focusing on that. I always share with people ways that they can take action and writing letters and write, you know, but sometimes it just gets, you know, you get tired of it. I mean, how many petitions can you sign? How many letters? And you know you're signing it, and it's going to a Senate that just doesn't care. It's going to a president that just doesn't care. So, mm-hmm. Sometimes it just feels pointless. And so this is just another way that it can feed you and keep you from going into that dark place and into that fear place and into that hopeless place. And, so I highly recommend it. And it's really nice to actually do it with others so that their energy helps to feed you. It's not just you doing it alone.
All of that is really good. I like to remind people that this planet that we live on has always been cruel. It's always been lovely, too. It's been everything. And it really depends on where you are in time. And in place and in attitude, because we've had genocides all over the planet. Our own country has had an abysmal history of the way we treat people. So terrible things have been going on all along. My personal feeling is I thought innocently, maybe naively, that things were getting better.
Mm-hmm.
At least with our laws, things seem to be getting better and supporting more people in need and victims and women and people of color and people who don't have as much privilege, and slowly trying to balance out all the inequities that have been caused over decades, hundreds, thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden things seem to be going backwards. So that's where a lot of my distress is coming from. But things have been bad for forever, and
right,
we just have to do the best we can with what we have. And many of us are scared because we never experienced this fear of feeling like we didn't have an opportunity or that people were going to come and do bad things to us. And many of us have had great privilege where we just didn't experience that world, but now it's getting kind of close to more of us.
Right, right. It's everywhere. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, our country was formed on atrocities and historically, you know, horrible things. And of course, you know, when Obama was elected, and I thought, oh my God, we're electing a person of color as president, you know. And yet I remember one of the funniest things was when The Onion came out with, you know, worst job in America given to black man, you know, and it was about Obama being elected. But as you said, so many things are positive and have changed in that, you know, how many people are vegan now? You can eat vegan going out. You can find vegetarian food in supermarkets and restaurants. You know, you should not be able to do that.
People know the world. People know the word in many languages.
Right, right.
It's global. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Karen, let's take our couple-minute break. And when we come back, I want to talk about COVID-19 and how, I mean, that's so devastating for so many people, but I want to talk about how that has changed things in your world and in many people's world and things that people can do going forward as we come into the colder weather and we know that we're going to have to go indoors. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. My guest is Karen Harkless from Responsible Eating and Living and All About Food, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And if you're just joining us, my guest today is Karen Harkless. She is the co-founder of Responsible Eating and Living and another PRN host. Her show is called All About Food. Karen, are you with me?
I sure am. I've just been sipping some genmaicha tea.
Mmm, yum. So, right before the break, I wanted to touch on COVID-19. And, you know, so many people have been affected by this. It's, you know, certainly changed our world, turned it upside down and inside out. And I know many people are getting depressed even at the thought of going indoors. You know, at least we've had some break from being completely in isolation because we could be outside together and just keep a distance. But now going inside as we approach winter, can you share some positive things that you've seen that have come out of sheltering in place and going indoors?
Sure. Well, for the most part, I can only speak from my own perspective, my life, and what I've been doing. But I do know that there are many people that are struggling with the isolation, especially people that are living alone. And that's where things like the telephone and Zoom. Zoom has really been amazing for so many of us to be able to almost reach out and touch someone and look at people and chat and have family gatherings and celebrate birthdays and have.
That's how we're doing the meditation through a Zoom. You know,
right.
And yes, you know, it's not the same as all being in the same room and feeling that energy, but it's a good second.
It's a lifeline, I think.
Yeah.
It's really a lifeline. So my partner, Gary DeMattei, and I, he's the co-founder of Responsible Eating and Living. We have been sheltering in place, and we've been really careful, not going out very much. I'm very grateful because even though we live in a New York City apartment, we have a terrace. And that has also been a lifeline because we could go out and get sheltering in place, fresh air. So I like to express my gratitude of all the things that have been good. Mm-hmm. And we like to cook, which makes a big difference. And we do a lot of cooking. So when the pandemic was becoming a reality, the first thing I thought about was food, because to me, it's all about food. I named my show It's All About Food because
when
that's
is
it.
Show? Can you share that with everyone listening in case people
yeah,
don't know?
It's every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Every Tuesday, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And of course, like all of us do in podcast world, those shows are all available archived on PRN and also on my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. I have all 11 plus years archived on the responsibleeatingandliving.com website, along with recipes and articles and videos.
Yeah.
And
we've both been doing it a long time, right?
Yeah. It's what I do.
Right.
And so the first thing was food. Where are we going to get our food? And can we express enough gratitude for the real people that got us through most of this in New York, those essential workers. I couldn't applaud hard enough for them. The people that brought our food, we get all of our food delivered. And I was never big into delivery before this, but I've certainly enjoyed it. And it's got me to focus more on planning. And the thing about food and eating well, it requires planning. It requires organization. So when I educate about cooking and do food shows or lectures on cooking, planning, preparation, organization is like the first piece. Get your kitchen in order. Make sure you have all the right tools. And I realized that this was another piece of it, making sure you have all the right ingredients and to have delivery, which is a tremendous privilege and convenience. I acknowledge that. But it did make me plan more. And I will definitely take this into the future with me, whether I get food delivered in the future or I go back to the old-fashioned grocery store. But planning in advance what I need has been a gift. And then we decided to do a number of different things. We buy more food in bulk because I didn't know if we weren't be able to get food. So we started to find companies that sold things in bulk, beans, bulk grains, bulk flours. And one of the companies that I just recently discovered, if you don't mind me sharing it with people, is Food to Live. They're here in Brooklyn, I believe. And so for the New York community, you can order things with them and you get them really fast because I was ordering also in bulk in California. And some of those shipments didn't arrive very well. They were packaged in boxes that were stuffed too large and they took a long time. So for New Yorkers, I think they're a great company. And I've been buying dates in bulk and garbanzo bean flour and grains. And some of their prices for small amounts are outrageously expensive. I have to admit that. But when you start buying 8 pounds, 10 pounds, then the prices are very reasonable and even better than you can get in the store. So you have to play that game. Mm-hmm. And we also started to make some of the condiments and prepared foods that we normally would buy because we weren't going to the stores to get them. So I learned how to make soy milk. I learned how to make tofu. And I've been making my own ketchup. And it's been a fun journey because when you make things yourself, you make them the way you like them. And they can be healthier. And I've been on a journey to eliminate salt and oil and sugar in the foods that I eat. And as a result, I've been getting really creative and I'm excited with some of the things that I've come up with. For example, the ketchup that we make. Ketchup typically has sugar in it. And now we make our ketchup with date paste.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
And then we make different versions of it because Gary likes things really spicy. So he's takes the ketchup and then adds all kinds of stuff to it to make hot sauce and barbecue sauce and all kinds of things. So we have fun with these different things. And I know that I'm going to take making these things into whatever the next normal is. I don't know. I make my own yogurt from cashews and my own sauerkraut. So doing more processed things, minimally processed, of course, I've been adding to my staple in the kitchen. And the more you get familiar with making these things, the easier it becomes. I know many people don't like cooking and they don't like preparing food in the kitchen. And it's like anything else. It takes time. It takes practice. Some of these things I was afraid to start. Yeah, I've been eating tofu for a long time and I thought, making it? Oh my God, I'm scared.
Yeah, I've really never made it. How hard is it?
It depends. That's what I want to say, because if you start with ready-made soy milk, it's very easy. You just boil the milk. You add a little of the nigari, which is helps it coagulate. And then you if you have a press, you could buy a little tofu press, or you could do it in a bowl with some weights. You just wrap it up in some cheesecloth and put weights on it and let the water come out, or buy a tofu press and just put it in there and it's done. It's very simple. The more complicated part is when you make the soy milk, which I highly recommend.
Soy milk.
Amazing. And making the soy milk is a little more complicated. Still not complicated, just takes time.
Right.
And this is, I think, what everyone's major complaint is about a lot of things since we've been so manipulated to love convenience. Is that things take time.
Just like I've been making, you know, the cashew cheeses. And making the cashew cheese is certainly easy, but making the Rejuvelac, which is, you know, the part of the cashew cheese that really makes it taste like cheese, you know, it's a little, you know, again, it's not difficult. It just takes time, you know. You have to let the rice sprout, and then you have to drain, and then you have to let it, you know, ferment. And so it just takes time, but it's not difficult. And it's so good.
No. I agree. Good for you.
Yeah. And yesterday I made a big batch of seitan. I guess I figure tofu, you can really buy some good tofu out there. But it's very hard to buy good seitan these days. You know, the companies that I used to get from Ray's seitan or The Bridge, they don't seem to be making it anymore, or at least not available in the stores that I go to. So seitan is one that I really have to make, because I don't like the seitan that you can buy in the store. Especially if you really want to get a big cutlet, you know, if you want to be able to make, you know, one of the staples that I used to make would be like seitan marsala, you know, something that feels, you know, more meaty for those people that are craving that kind of thing. And so seitan, you really have to make in order to get good seitan, I think.
I used to eat a lot of seitan, and now I'm one of those people who avoids wheat. I found that I have some problems with wheat. But one thing I want to add, which whenever I talk about wheat, and I do eat some wheat, is that it absolutely has to be organic.
Yes, absolutely. And
absolutely has to be, because of these glyphosate residues that are in the wheat, that are in other grains, that are in beans. Because I don't know who thought about this crazy idea of adding Roundup and glyphosate to crops to desiccate them so that they can be harvested more quickly. But those residues are really wreaking havoc on our guts.
Absolutely. And I think all the people, you know, so many people that have gluten sensitivity are more sensitive. What it really is being allergic to Roundup, because that's how they dry the crops now. You know, they just, you know, it makes it dry quicker. And I first became aware of this years ago when I went to Italy to Terra Madre. And, you know, the Italians were talking about how wheat was grown mostly south of Rome, you know, mostly in Sicily, but you know, that's where they got all their wheat from. And then all of a sudden Canada became a bigger producer of wheat than Italy. And they were like, how is that possible? You know, they are so much further north. How can they possibly be growing wheat and harvesting it with that climate? And then that's when they found out that that's how they were doing it. They were drying it with Roundup. Yeah,
that's a sad
really important
story.
So some ancient grains, you know, if you get like einkorn wheat, or, you know, wheat that, you know, is just not highly processed and, you know.
Yeah,
more.
That's the only wheat that I get. I get einkorn, and sometimes I get the grains and use a Vitamix to grind them into flours. I wanted to add that too, because this is my new obsession. I make my own gluten-free flour. So you were talking about your butternut squash muffins, which sound lovely. Anything with butternut squash to me is just fantastic. I love that.
Yeah.
That plant, that food, that squash, it's just
me
perfection.
Too. There's so many things you can do with it. But
yeah,
I had never made muffins with it.
And it's sweet, and it can be chewy, and it just has a lot going for it. But with gluten-free flours, when the pandemic happened, I wasn't buying a lot of processed foods. I was just getting produce and whole grains and beans. And then I thought, I'm always on a journey to make the foods I like and make them healthier. And so I started working with gluten-free flours about 13 years ago, and my niece was diagnosed with celiac disease. She was 4 years old. And then I just jumped on gluten-free baking, and I've learned a lot in the process. But now I don't want to use the ready-made gluten-free flours that have starches in them. I just want to use whole grains. But that's challenging, because to get the texture you like that you find with wheat flour, sometimes you have to add a little magic to these flours. And that magic may not be the healthiest thing, but it gives you the crumb you like or the texture you like. So I've been playing with making my own flours, and I'm having a lot of fun and having great results. So I take oats, either oat groats or steel cut oats or rolled oats, and I take millet and buckwheat, even garbanzo beans, although they're a little harder to grind. And I grind up my own flour combinations, and then I bake with that and see how they respond. And I've been very happy with the results.
Rice flour too, or no?
I don't use rice as much. I love rice and I enjoy the flavor, but I know that rice comes with arsenic. And even though I buy organic brown basmati rice from California, which the few studies that I've done show that that has a lower amount of arsenic in it, I like to have diversity in my grains. And very often when we eat rice, we'll combine a organic brown rice with a black rice and a red rice, and we'll make a blend. And so I'm not eating as much of the
rice
flour.
Red rice have less arsenic?
You know, I think so, but it's really hard to know. There's only been so many tests.
Right.
So
right.
I just think
almost
that
spend the money to test that.
Yeah, it's complicated. So I think diversity in everything is really the way to go. That's the lesson here. Diversity
right,
in
everything
our whole grains
in our
have different colors and textures, just like with
Well,
people.
And also, and everything is contaminated. So, you know, I will share, and I'm sure you know this, but for those listening, to remove 90% of the arsenic, what I've been told is if you really scrub the rice under running water first, so you can soak it a little bit and then scrub it under running water, and then cook it the same way you cook pasta. So I no longer cook my rice, 1 cup rice to 2 cups of water, which was, you know, the standard for so many years. I now cook my 1 cup rice in a big pasta pot filled with filtered water, and, you know, and then drain it out. The one downside of that, of course, is, you know, if you had cooked your rice before where you seasoned it, you know, and I sauteed onions and I cook it in vegetable broth or whatever. You can't do that anymore because you're not going to do a whole pasta pot full of vegetable broth and pour it out. So you have to season the rice after. So that's the only difference. Mm. It's really
right.
worth
Right, and
it.
You lose some nutrients too.
Uh-huh. But you also
lose
90% of the
arsenic.
You lose
some nutrients. It's a compromise.
Uh-huh. Right, right.
Yeah.
But that is something that people really need to know about rice. So, unfortunately, that's true. So, can you share with us, we don't have that much time left, but I wanted to touch on the nonprofit that you run, Responsible Eating and Living. Can you share that with my listeners, what you do with your organization?
Sure. So, we're going to be 10 years old in July, which is amazing. Time marches on. So we were founded in 2011. We launched in 2011, and it was basically a lot of the motivation behind it was all of the information I learned, not just being plant-based for so many years, but then having my cancer experience and putting together all the things that helped me heal. And I wanted to share that with the world. And my partner, Gary, came up with the brilliant acronym, Responsible Eating and Living, R-E-A-L. He's an acronym guy.
Uh-huh.
And I just love the name. I love our logo. And in addition to producing my show. It's all about food and archiving it on our website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. We have a gazillion recipes. And we've done some food shows. We have some articles. I had a blog that I did every day for 5 years. I ended it in February. It's funny that I ended it just as the pandemic was starting. I didn't even realize that. And maybe I shouldn't have, but it was a decision I had made just to do it for 5 years. And it was called What Vegans Eat. And it's still up on the website. And every day I posted our everything we ate, everything, and talked about it. And it was really a fun thing to do, not just for the people who read it, but to have this online diary, because for me, just mentioning a few of the things that we ate and did during the day brought back the whole day for me. And it's nice to have that resource. Like, what did we have then? And what did we do that day? And it's all there, at least a little 5 minute nugget, 5 year nugget. So those are some things you can find. Yeah. And that's Responsible Eating and Living.
Cool. Yeah, well, everyone should check out the website. I was, of course, perusing it before our interview, and it was great. Lots of information on there. Really wonderful. So the work you're doing is just great. You know, keep it up, because we need to share it. You know, talking again about being vegan, I have found I find that with restrictions, it really sparks my creativity. You know, when I have to, you mentioned how you want to take something that, you know, you used to like and try to make it healthier. Well, that's also what I try to do. And now even my vegetarian dishes, trying to make it more turning it vegan is a whole different thing. You know, one of our family favorites was spinach pie, you know, and of course my spinach pie for years I make with kale and Swiss chard, because that's what I have growing in the garden, much more than spinach. And, you know, instead of feta cheese, you know, using a cashew cream and, you know, just changing it up. Put mushrooms in there for some umami flavor and lots of dill. And it came out delicious, you know. And, of course, instead of it still has wheat, of course, the phyllo pastry. But, you know, instead of spreading it with butter, you're spreading it with some olive oil. So it's
We make our own butter, by the way. That was another thing we've been making since the pandemic started. So Miyoko Shinner has a great artisan vegan cookbook, and we use her recipe to make a cultured butter. It's fantastic.
Which book?
It's I'm turning around where I have 100 cookbooks, and I'm looking for the title.
Oh, okay. Who's the author?
Miyoko Shinner, It's the homemade vegan pantry.
Okay.
The homemade vegan pantry. But I found that every time I've taken foods away from my diet, I found my world opened up, expanded, and I discovered so much more. I've never felt deprived or restricted.
Yeah. Well, you can't. I mean, if you're going to feel deprived, it's not going to be able to be long lasting. So you need to, you know, and if you're going to be vegan, you really need to cook. I mean, you know, people who try to be vegan and don't cook, you know, cannot have a healthy diet. You really need to.
Just wanted to end and say that I'm very jealous that you're growing mushrooms. That just sounds so fantastic.
It is. You want to hear the best thing? Listen to this. For the shiitake mushrooms, after a year, when you're ready for them to fruit, when you want the shiitake mushrooms to come out and you want to control, you don't want all the mushrooms to happen all at once. So you want to control when they start coming out. You whack it with a hammer. You whack the log with a hammer, which simulates a tree falling in the forest and tells the mushroom spores it's time to come out. Isn't that cool?
Wow. That's amazing. That sounds a little violent, but maybe that's what life is all about.
Anyway, I love that story. But yeah, we have lots of the yellow oyster mushrooms. They're just going crazy. I'll send you some photos. But everyone out there, we are just about out of time. I want to thank you all for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green and my guest Karen Harklass from Responsible Eating and Living and her show, It's All About Food. Thanks so much for joining us, and I'll see you all again next week. And thank you, Karen, so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye, everyone. Have a great rest of the week. See you next week.